Our speaker tonight, I had a few moments to chat with him before eating. He was born and raised in Arkansas. That's a state that I used to wake up in. And he presides in Winter Garden, Florida, and that's a state I used to assume the position in. So I know there's got to be a connection there somewhere. I'm not going to take up a whole lot of his time because I know you're really going to enjoy him. I heard a lot of people that said they have heard him, and he gives a great talk. I've never heard him talk. I've heard him talk to me. But let's give a warm Augusta AA welcome to the Arkansas traveler, Charles L.
My name is Charles Lindenwood. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, family. I was sitting way back there, but I decided to come up here because I wanted to get up here to the microphone before the clapping stopped. You know, it's an awful feeling. You know, they introduce you and people clap and then they quit and you're still walking up here. I was sitting over there by Ed a while ago and he said, "Are you nervous?" And I said, "No." But I didn't finish it. Terrified is more the word. I was invited down here, or up here, to talk by Leon. Now, Leon Johnson. When you got a name like Johnson, you ain't breaking their anonymity. And Ted Earl has been my host, and he's done a beautiful job of it. But if I don't make the kind of talk that you figure I ought to, don't blame me. Blame, what's his name back there? Because Leon called me up and asked me if I'd come down. Well, I'd just be tickled to death to. And I am tickled to death to. But any time that I'm asked to go anywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, I go. Because there was a time when nobody asked me to go anywhere. See, when you get down as low as I was, you don't go nowhere. You're either brought or sent. And it just makes my heart feel good to look out over this sea of bright faces, nice, clean, some of you. Look like you've bathed recently. And I'm going to do the best I know how. That ain't much. I'm really not a speaker. My story is so long I haven't heard it all myself. And I just talk till I get somebody says shut up, you know, or the time runs out and I quit. And there's no continuity to it. Tomorrow, why somebody'll ask you, "Did you go over to that thing?" Or you'll say yes, and they'll say, "Who talked?" And you'll say, "Fellow, they call the Arkansas traveler." And they'll say, "What did he talk about?" And you'll say, "Damn fine, no." See it. I come from Arkansas by request. Now, that ought to tell you something, because When I was asked to leave, they were still giving people 160 acres just to come there. And it was the judge that said that I ought to leave, and I said, why? And he said, well, have you noticed that you've been staying in jail pretty near all the time? I said, yes, I've noticed that. And he said, well, that's where you're going to stay, long as you stay in Arkansas. I said, well, this is my home. What'll I do? And he said, well, won't you go over to Tennessee or Texas or Oklahoma, Missouri, someplace where you ain't known. Get you a new start. Well, I got to thinking on that and went down and caught me a freight train and went to Dallas. Got arrested. And I left there and went to El Paso. Got arrested. And I went to Lordsburg, New Mexico. They had a sheriff there that didn't like me. He arrested me. And I went to Los Angeles, and they put me in Lincoln Heights, rested me there. It seemed like everywhere I went, there I was. And that's what happens when you become arrestable. You just look like, to these policemen, they look at you and they say, he ought to be in jail somewhere. And this judge, he is nice. He said, I've known you and your family since before you was born. And you come from a fine, upstanding Christian home. And did you ever notice that nearly everybody comes to talk here or anywhere else comes from a good Christian home? Sometimes I wonder if that's the right place to raise kids. Well, I was raised during the Depression, and we was poor, but it was popular to be poor. Everybody was poor. And my mother used to send me to the store to get some liver for the cat. We didn't have no cat. We couldn't afford a cat. In fact, nobody ate liver in those days. They thought it was poison or something. And this butcher would cut nice strips of liver, and my mother would fry it and put a little flour on it and brown it good and cook onions with it, make gravy. Woo! I loved it. And still do. It's never got through to me that liver ain't good for you. And she'd send me to the store to get soup bone. That is free, too. And have the butcher to cut that big knuckle bone with that great big knife he had, that whacker, you know, and so that suet would run out into the soup and just flavor it good. Put some onions and salt and pepper in there and whatever the neighbors had in their garden. And that is good. Whoo, I love that. And lots of times we'd have, for supper, we'd have cornbread and buttermilk. I thought we was eating that way because we liked it. And it was up till I went to school before I found out how poor we was. We are so poor that we didn't have enough cover when it got cold, you know, at night. And we did have dogs. And when it got cold like that, I'd just pull up a dog. And I've seen it. It gets cold in Arkansas. I've seen a three-dog night. I had an uncle and an aunt that never had been to town. Uncle seldom, and aunt puny. And they had to go to town on account of some taxes or something, and they went in and got through the business, and they got hungry. And they went to a little restaurant there. One of these little restaurants, you know, it has signs up on the wall that says soup so much and stew so much and chili so much and hot dogs so much and hamburgers, signs like that. And Aunt Puny looked up at Uncle Seldom and said, "What is a hot dog?" And Uncle Seldom says, "I don't know. Let's get one and find out." So he told that man behind the counter, said, "Get us two of them hot dogs, please, sir." And he come out with two hot dogs and gave her hers and him his. And she opened hers and closed it real quick. You're way ahead of me. And she looked up at Uncle Seldom and said, "What part did you get?" Well, I wish you was with me everywhere I went. You make me glad I told that. Yeah. Aunt Puny's husband died. Now, this is plumb sad. And she loved him so much that she had him buried right under her bedroom window. And every night when she went to bed, she'd raise the shade and look out there at his grave and say, "Good night, Henry," and throw him a kiss. And every morning she'd get up and raise the shade and say, "Good morning, Henry." And she met another old Arkansas boy out there, and they got married. And the first night they went to bed in the same bed that her and Henry slept in, the same house. They went to bed, and she went over and raised the shade and threw Henry a kiss and told him good night. And the next morning, after she slept with her new husband, she went over and raised the window, raised the shade, and said, "Henry." Well, my family, they're fine folks, but you know, I had an aunt that's just as poor as all the rest of us, but she is uppity, and she liked to show off, and she decided to have a party. And she invited all the folks around and told everybody, I'm going to serve caviar. And folks talked about it. They never had eaten any caviar. And she went to the store to get her lunch meat and cheese and onions. And she went over to this little place where they kept the caviar. Been there for years, I guess. Nobody had enough money to buy it. And it is so high that she couldn't afford it, and she knew she wasn't going to have caviar. And it just made her sick that she told these people that. But then she noticed that they had some number two buckshot. And she bought a plate full of that and two cans of sardines done up in cottonseed oil. And she took that buckshot home and opened them sardines and poured that oil all over. Just made them shine. And they looked just like fish eggs. And she had a big old oak wooden table, and she set them right out in the middle, way over where she figured nobody'd reach them. And they was a fat woman, ate every bit of it. It ever on crackers. And Lord, that liked to worry her to death. And the next morning, she called this woman up, and she said, I want to apologize to you about last night. And this woman interrupted her right there. She said, honey, it ain't you that needs to apologize to me. It's me that needs to apologize to you. Because last night, as I left your wonderful party, I noticed and I got out on the front porch that my shoe had come untied. And I stooped down to tie my shoe and shot your cat. Well, guess I'd better quit while I'm ahead. But, you know, you hear people talk about in AA keeping your memory green. And that's true. You got to remember from whence you came. And I'm looking into my rear view mirror and talking to you about where I come from. And it's all sort of fantastic to some people, but I believe that everywhere I go to talk, I'm talking to somebody. And I believe that all this stuff that I say makes sense to somebody. Don't make much sense to me. But I really do believe that it makes sense to somebody. We had a fella out there that was, he's a good coon hunter. And there's a fella come from a big city just to find him to learn how to hunt coon. And he found him, and he'd bought him, this fella from this big town had bought him a Chevrolet four-wheel drive. And got him a big store-bought box to haul his dog in. Had one of them big red bone hounds, fat and sleek, sitting up in that truck. And he seen this fella that he'd heard about and asked him, said, are you the coon hunter I've been hearing about? He said, yes, I've hunted a few coon. He said, where's your dog? He said, he's laying over there, old skinny blue tick hound. Nothing but skin and bone, just laying there like he's dead. And they said, "Is that your dog?" And he says, "Yep, that's him." I said, "Lord, what do you feed him?" He said, "Turnips." He said, "Turnips?" I said, "My dog won't eat turnips." He said, "He wouldn't either for about a month." I had an uncle that he was awful bad to drink, and he got him a room, cheap room, and there wasn't but one window in the room, and it opened on a brick building, and all you could see out that window was this old brick side of this brick building. And he looked over on the dresser, and there was about that much whiskey left in a fifth. And he said to that whiskey, "You've caused this. You've caused me to lose my job and my self-respect and my wife, and I'm going to smash you up against that building over there." And he picked up that bottle and throwed it back like, you know how a bottle about fourth full gurgles when you pull. He said, "Well, if you're going to apologize..." I never did run completely out of teeth before I got these false ones. But I had two. One up here and one down here, and they didn't match. But I loved these little Spanish peanuts. And I don't know if you ever tried to eat a Spanish peanut with this two teeth or not. But it takes about 50 clicks just for one. And I used to go to matinees because it is cheaper, and I'd sit there with my little 10-cent sack of peanuts and chomping on, go tick, 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 tick. And if it was a slow picture, you know, I'd go click, 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 click. And if it was one of them fast, robust cowboy pictures, I'd go click, 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 click. And nobody'd sit with around me. All the seats around me be empty. And one day there's a lady come and sit, not the very next seat, but over one seat. And it wasn't long before she said, "Hey, what you eating?" I said, "What do you care? I ain't going to give you none." Now, that ought to told me something right there. Because anybody that hadn't got but two teeth, and they think more of a Spanish peanut than they do a woman, there's something more wrong with them than this alcoholism. Well, excuse me. I was thinking. I do that when I think. I messed around empty. I crawled over a fence where they had some wild onions, you know, they about as big as your little finger. Did you ever eat one of them with two teeth? That's a chore. But the way you do it, you take them and you split them like that. And then you'd give him a quarter turn, just turn him a quarter turn, and spear him again. like that. You got four little prongs sticking up there. And you know how impatient and impetuous alcoholics are. Then you go like that, wind up with a little thing looked like a broom. And then you'd grab him and gum him, you know, because you wanted that juice. That's what you're after, that juice, you know. And I was doing that, and a policeman, I just looked out the corner of my eye, and there he was looking at me like that. And pretty soon, he did this. Well, I had an onion split and one at the ready, and I walked over with my onions and I said, "Yeah." And he said, "What the hell are you doing?" And I said, "I'm eating onions. Is it against the law in the nation's capital to eat onions?" And he said, "No, it ain't. But seemed to me like if you gone graze, you'd go on out in the country." Well, that made me nervous, and I was broke. And I went up to the flop house where I had been residing. I always got me a cot in the corner where I wouldn't have but one neighbor. Because invariably, there'd be a beady-eyed guy get the cot next to me. And I never did trust beady-eyed guys. Never did. And I went over there, and I had 35 cents in a tobacco sack in my watch pocket. And I had, this was a different day I'm telling you about. You know, I told you I was broke that last night. I had 35 cents this time. And when you got money like that, you got to be careful with it. And I had this place there and that beady-eyed fella right next to me. And I was just drunk right. Not knee-walking drunk, just where you're just right. The whole world was right. I had eaten that day, and I had that 35 cents for a drink the next morning. Everything was just right. And there was that beady-eyed guy. And I knew I was a sound sleeper. And I knew if I went to sleep, he'd roll me. Well, I watched him for a while, and then I said to him, "Hey, you look like an honest feller. I've got 35 cents here, cash. That's enough for us to get a drink in the morning. Would you hold it for me till in the morning? 'Cause I'm a sound sleeper and somebody's liable to roll me." He said, "Why, yes, I'll be glad to." And I watched him till he went to sleep and rolled him. You got to be smart. I mean, you just can't let your mind run in idle. You got to keep on your toes all the time, especially when you're on the bunk. And I used to hunt. I want to tell you about the first drink I ever had. It's out in Fush Bottoms, that's out east of Little Rock. And I went out there and I saw a wisp of smoke coming up out of the wood. And I wanted to see what was causing that. And went over there and looked, and it was a guy had a still, and I never had seen a still before. much less, I never had even had a drink of whiskey. And he saw me about the time I saw him, and he said, come on over here, I got something for you. Well, that's what I was hunting, something. And I went over there, and he had one of them jailhouse tin cups, you know, hold about, oh, a little over a pint, I reckon, and that worm, that thump keg was going, and that worm coming down, and that whiskey, white lightning, drip, 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 down in that tin cup. He said, try this. Well, I took it and chug-a-lugged it. Lord, I thought I'd never breathe again. Ooh, I didn't faint. I just went down like a wet dish rag. I just in a little pile. I got down there, and he was standing there looking at me like, wonder how long it's going to take him to die. And I was wondering the same thing. And finally, that glow come, that warm feeling. My toes got happy. My hair rejoiced. My fingernails was happy, joyous, and free. And I got up and started telling him how to run that still. And from that minute on, it seemed like all the education I needed was a little of that white lightning. And that got me in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. Somebody told me, you ought to get married. Well, I did. 7 times. 7 of the finest women. There's one of them, she and I got arrested the same day. And the judge gave me 30 days and just gave her 10 days. And of course, she got out 20 days before I did, and I never saw her since. She done something, I don't know, and she left. That is sad, too. There's a lot of this stuff is sad, ain't it? You know, it's the funniest thing in the world. The only place in the whole world you can go to where there's a big crowd of folks and tell them the saddest stories in the world, and everybody just laughs. No wonder the psychiatrist has such a time with us. I got so bad that they'd let me stay at home back in the back bedroom, but they wouldn't let me carry a key to the front door. When I come home, I had to knock on the door to get in. And some member of my family would come to the door and open it just a little teeny bit and look at me and say, yes? And I'd say, what do you mean, yes? I live here. Yes, but you're drunk. Why, of course I'm drunk. If I ain't drunk, I wasted a lot of money on whiskey. Now let me in the house. And I'd go in the house and push by everybody and go back in my little room and slam the door and sit on the side of the bed and cry. And I'd want to go outside that room and put my arms around my mother and tell her I was sorry. And tell her I wasn't going to do it anymore. And I really meant that with every bone and every drop of blood and every fiber in my body. And I couldn't do it, because I knew if I went out that door, some member of my family would approach me and say, "Charles, why do you do it? Why do you act this way? You were raised different to this. You know better than to do this." And I couldn't take that. Guilt, yes. I guess that's guilt that causes us to feel this way. And I remember that I went back in my room, and the next day, my cousin Alt, a big, great, big, rough, tough fella, he called me out of my room. Now, when Alt called you, you went out. Because he had a habit of shaking folks. I don't mean just like that. It, up and around the room with you. And shoes skittering out across the floor. Teeth running around. And when he got through shaking you, you shook up. And when old Alt said, "Charlie, come out here," I come a running. "Yeah." He said, "We've had a meeting." I said, "Have?" He said, "Yes, and it was about you." I said, "What?" See, I didn't want to make him mad. I was trying to be nice. And he said, "Yes, it is about you, and we're going to send you to a psychiatrist." I said, "Are?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "If you don't go, we're going to bug you." Now, in Arkansas, that means they're going to put you away in the state hospital for nervous diseases. I knew what that meant. I said, "I'll go. Where does he live?" Well, I went to see this psychiatrist. He was a little fella, had pale blue eyes, just as sweet as he could be. And I learned to love him. And he'd make me angry. He asked me the damnedest questions you ever heard. Like one day he says, "How you and your mother get along?" I said, "Just fine." He said, "Do you ever have a relationship?" I said, "No. Did you ever have one with your mother?" And he got mad. He got something wonderful upset. And called that session off for that day. I learned that you have to be careful with them people, because they get upset awful easy. Well, the next time, I went to him for a long time. And I wondered, he sent me a bill one time, and I never had any money. And I went, I said, "That fella ain't right." And one day he asked me, he said, "Now, I'm going to ask you some questions, and you just answer with the first word comes in your mind, just anything." I said, "Go ahead." He said, "You ready?" I said, "I'm ready." He said, "Now, what would happen if I poked your eyes out?" I said, "Well, I couldn't see." He said, "That's good thinking. Try to retain this trend of thought." And he says, "What had happened if I'd cut your ears off without a moment's hesitation. I said, I couldn't see. He said, how in the world did you arrive at this conclusion? I said, well, if you was to cut my ears off, my hat would fall down over my eyes. I couldn't see. Now, y'all knew that. Funny how the littlest things like that, they don't know. And you have to explain these things to them. Well, Pete asked me one day, he says, what I want you to do is to give me a rundown on your day. I said, like what? He said, well, tell me what happens when you wake up, and then after that, what happens, and so on during the day. I said, well, the first thing I do when I wake up is open my eyes. And knowing him as I did, I explained why. I said, the reason I do this is to see where I wound up. And seemed like he wound up in the same place every day. No experience at all. What's that? I don't guess he had any fun. Just nothing ever happened to him. But then he said to me one day, he said, we're going to go into your childhood. I said, go ahead. You've been everywhere else. He said, as a child, did you wet the bed? I said, still do. But I said, doctor, you trying to find out the cause of my drinking, ain't you? He said, yes. I said, well, wetting the bed ain't a cause of drinking. That's a result of drinking. And if you don't believe this, you just drink yourself about a half a case of beer and eat a few goofballs. And if you don't wake up in a puddle, there's something wrong with your kidney. Well, that diagnosis didn't please him at all. And he, next time he asked me, he said, did you ever pick your nose? I said, when it needed it. And he'd get red in the face and get to quivering. And I knew that I had to help him. Sometimes he'd get so upset I'd think I was going to lose him. And he is my first patient. I wanted to take care of him. And he is talking to me one day, and he's saying this and saying that, and he finally noticed that I had a little black ball and I was rolling it around in my hand like this. And he couldn't keep his eyes off of it, even though he was upset. And I kept rolling this little ball round in my hand. Finally, he said, "Why are you rolling that little black ball around in your hand?" I said, "Well, now, you're not the easiest man in the world to talk to today, and this kind of soothes my nerve." He said, "Do you mind if I try it?" I said, "Why, certainly. Go ahead." And I handed him the little black ball, and he rolled it around in his hand. Pretty soon, a big grin come on his face. He said, "It does soothe your nerves, don't it?" I said, "Deed it do." He said, "Where did you get it?" And I said, "I see you've been where I've been before." I told him. I said, "Out of my nose." Well, that happened to him. That is just before they put me in the nut house. Me and him both. But I got out. He never made it. You know, doctors, medical doctors, preachers, they all fine folks that study a long time, psychiatrists. But you know, we've got a three-phase disease. It's physical, and it's mental, and it's spiritual. Well now, if you go to a doctor, a medical doctor, he treats the physical part, and sooner or later he'll say, "Well, I've done all I can. You're all right physically." But he's left two-thirds of your disease untreated. And if you go to a man of the cloth, he'll treat you spiritually, and he'll get you in church and do a lot of things, whatever they do according to the church you go to. Pretty soon he'll do something and tell you, "Well, you're spiritually all right." But he's left two-thirds of your disease untreated. Well, if you go to a psychiatrist, he'll work on your mind, what there is of it. And pretty soon he'll say, "Well, you're all right. You can go back to work or do whatever you was doing before you met me." And he's left two-thirds of your disease untreated. And you go to these hospitals. You know, not hospitals, they're treatment centers, if you got insurance. And you know how they tell you whether you're cured or not? When your insurance runs out. There was a fella went to one of these treatment centers, and he's just a regular old down-home boy. And after 4 or 5 days, you know, he's eating and getting evil ideas when these pretty little nurses would walk in. He'd lay up in the bed and grin. You know, and
And nurse would walk in and say, "Oh, we look so good. Your temperature is normal. And you're eating everything. Oh, you just look so fine. And here's your breakfast." And she'll say, "Now, I want you to eat everything here good for you. And here's a specimen glass. I want you to give me a specimen today." He lay there. He's thinking, "I'll get you this time." She walks out and he eats all of his breakfast with the exception of his pineapple juice, which he pours into the specimen glass. And the nurse comes back. "Oh, we've eaten all of our breakfast and you look so good. And here's your specimen. My, but it's cloudy." And he reaches over and gets it. "Why, it is cloudy. I'll run it through again for you." What time did I start? How much time you got on that tape?
About 50 minutes.
Huh? How long?
Well, come
here. Yeah.
Oh, we got about 40 minutes left.
I got time to tell this one story. If I can remember it. What was I going to tell? The older I get, the more forgetful. You know, I remember things that happened 40 or 50 years ago with clarity. I remember names and dates and go in the next room and forget what I went after. And I forgot what I was going to say. Y'all feel sorry for me? Don't waste your sympathy. It's coming to you, too. Get as old as I am. But I know another story. This story has to do... In fact, I might tell two since I've got all that much time. This story has to do with a ship that was sinking in the North Atlantic Ocean one cold winter's night, black, pitch black, no moon, no stars. The wind was blowing and howling, and the waves were like mountains, and the ship was rocking, and it had lost its rudder. And the captain gave orders to abandon ship. And there was pandemonium on this deck as people tried to find their respective lifeboats. They looked all around and they was running here and there, and some of the boats had been lowered over the side. And the captain looked down at one boat and he picked up his megaphone and he shined his searchlight on this boat and he said, "You men in number 10 lifeboat, three of you are going to have to jump overboard because that boat is overloaded. And if you don't jump over out of that boat, you'll all drown." My God, what a decision for three men to make who thought their lives had been spared. Well, pretty soon a man stood up and he said, "There'll always be an England." And he saluted and jumped overboard. And then another man stood up and he too saluted. And he said, Vive la France. And he too disappeared in those dark waters, never to be seen again. Then another man stood up, an American. And he said, Remember the Alamo? And picked up two Japs and threw them overboard. Well, that's how I feel about AA. I found a home here and I ain't going nowhere. I love this group. I love this town. I love the people in it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ain't going nowhere. God bless you.